I'm here in Kilbride and I'm talking to Aidan Cruz. Aidan, we're in a lovely spot up here and looking out over those fields and hills, it really looks magnificent. It's a place that I'd say you love very much yourself living here.
I do, yes.
Are you a blow-in here or could you tell me?
I'm from Blessington, I'm from the parish. I lived in Blessington all my life.
And your wife?
So my wife lived in this particular house.
What was her maiden name?
Plant.
The Plants, how long have they been in this area here?
Plants have been here a considerable length of time. They were worked up in the Kilbride Army Camp that would be in the 1800s. So there's four or five generations of them here.
And did you trace back, with the cottage and the house out there, her people, you know, the what was their existence?
They were farmers. Yeah, they done basic farming. You know, so keep some cattle and calves, and you sell milk to the dairy. Basically, you know, small farm, rural area, you know.
Surviving just like all the other small farmers in
yes.
the area. Yeah. And I know you've taken a great interest in local history here and you've studied it in great detail. Has that always been an interest of yours?
It has. From early childhood. My mother was a Kerry woman. We were related to Thomas Ashe. The 1916 leader, and when we'd go to Dublin, she used to bring us into the museum, and that used to be a great treat. I used to love going in there, and that's sort of kindled my interest in history.
And your mother was a Hannafin woman.
She was a Hannafin,
yeah,
and she was a great historian herself, and she was a native Irish speaker.
How did she find her way up here? How did your father and your mother meet?
My grandfather died when the family were young, and my eldest uncle had the urge to travel. They had a large farm near Dingle, and the Land Commission gave them farms up in Offaly. They wanted to subdivide the land among the local farmers down in their parish, because the farms down there, they weren't big enough for it to make a living on.
Yeah,
but by subdividing this, it made them viable.
This was the early Congested Districts Board Act,
yes,
when it came
and
out.
Then
that was in the 1920s.
It was 1928. And from that then, they got a chance of getting two farms in Strafford in County Kildare. One was near Castle Warden, and then the other was a place called Turnings. And my father then lived near Strafford. So that's how my mother and father met.
And what was your father doing?
My father was a butcher. He worked in Naas. So there was people then from Lacken, which is quite close to Blessington, told them like that there'd be a great opening for a butcher shop in Blessington. So he come up to Blessington and fell in love with the place, and the rest is history.
Yes. And that's where you grew up.
And I was born and reared then in Blessington.
And born in 1945,
yes,
just the end of the war. And
yes.
What was it like growing up in Blessington? What are your own earliest memories?
Well, the Fair Day was always a big treat in Blessington. Like the street would be clogged with sheep, cattle, and then the traveling salesmen coming in with their goods and that selling. That's we used to love going to the stalls, and then coming up to Christmas was another big treat. There was a local drapery shop, Balfe's was the name of it, and to see the ties in the shop window used to be, we couldn't wait to run down from the school where to get out that Balfe's were doing up their window. And then another big treat then would be in April then, when Punchestown would be on. it was sort of the start of the marble season. We'd buy marbles then and be playing marbles. And an innocent hobby we had would be sitting on the wall counting the number of cars going to Punchestown. So that.
And in those days, interestingly now, was there a lot of traffic on the roads?
Not much, no. Yeah. But that's why we'd be fascinated with all the cars going down. Sure, we on the Manor Kilbride Road, we used to have football matches, and we used to have to put two lookouts on the corner there just to make sure that when the police would be coming down the street, we'd have to disperse. And then again at the school wall, the old school, it's gone now, but we used to play handball there, and again we used to have a lookout. But you wouldn't be able to do that now with the volume of traffic.
Were you educated by the Christian Brothers?
I was educated in national school. I was with the Christian Brothers, yes.
And how was your education? Did you find schooling like everybody else? How did you enjoy those years?
Well, again, I suppose like most people, I enjoyed coming home from it, not the school itself.
And did you go into second level education or did you?
I did in latter years. I didn't. I went into the family business with my father. And then in latter years, then I had an accident and I gave up the butchering. And I decided then, I got an opportunity then to do a course in rural development in UCD. And from that then, I progressed, I got the urge then to start doing more research.
That's really what changed your life, I suppose, in a way. Otherwise, you'd be still a butcher working
Well,
away
I suppose, slaving away.
But continued with this research, but you got married then, did you?
Yes.
And you moved up here.
I moved then to the family home here.
Now, the place name here, what's the townsland called?
It's Glenhest. It's the townland, I believe it's called after a townland in Mayo. It's only just a small area, so there's no much history to it. It is, Manor Kilbride is the area. Yeah. And it is just one little particular spot in it, So that's what I was told anyway, that it's called after a townland in Mayo.
Yeah, that's interesting. And then no idea where, for what reason.
We don't know. There's two big houses here. There's the Glenhest house. And it was a hotel in the 50s, and then an unfortunate accident, then it was burned. So I think the owners of that may have had relations or some down in Mayo. I'm not 100% sure, because I could never find out anything about it.
And the land is full of archaeology and...
This area is a hive of archaeology. Going back, we called our house Sea Finn, because when we look across the hill there, we can see Sea Finn Mountain. And on top of that, there's an old megalithic tomb. And it's actually older than the pyramids. So that's, and of course, I love hill walking. So when we look up, the first thing we see in the morning would be Sea Finn. So that's what we called our house Sea Finn.
And other, I can see here from some photographs you've taken that, there is quite a lot of, could you talk to me about water, we all know how important water is, but wells, holy wells and fountains, have you got any of those locally?
Yeah, we have quite a few holy wells in the area. We've a holy well on the Sallygap Road, which there was a cure for stomach ailments. And on the down in the village itself, there's two holy wells out in the fields at the back. One is known as St. Patrick's Well and the other is St. Bridget's Well. So there are three that just come to mind at the moment.
What about pattern days? People coming to those holy wells is
No,
long gone.
that's long gone. The last pattern day would have been, I think, would be back in the 1930s. There was a well caught at Scurlux, which would be between Blesnan and Manor Kilbride. And people used to put rags on the bush, but a local clergyman then stopped it. He classed it as a pagan custom, so the people stopped doing it then.
And you know the way that I suppose any of the gatherings or groups of people traveling, I suppose the pilgrims of the past used to visit these sacred places. Can you name any more locally here that people would have come to?
Well, there was up at Adown, there was a church up there. It's long gone, and there was also one in where the Kilbride Army Camp is. There's a shooting range there. There used to be a church there, and then down in the village itself, there's the remains of an old church, and there was a cave in it where there was a hermit lived in it. That'd be down in Kilbride village.
And the no trace of those churches now, are they
The
parts of them left?
Down and the camp ones are, there's no trace of them, but there is the ruins, still the remains of one down in the old graveyard.
That's the one with the
With
little hut in it, or the
there was a cave in it,
cave, yeah.
yeah.
And that was lived in by
It was what I
a
had
local.
heard, like that day when it was a monk that lived, was up in Adown. And he moved down then when the monks died out up there. There's a little burial place at the edge of the river up there. It's called Areligine. And he was the last. So he moved down into the cave then, lived there as a hermit.
And the I suppose when you look around and you see the way the landscape has changed so much, but it's quite timeless up here, isn't it? I mean, everything is still as it would have been, you know, when you look out
When
your window
you're
here.
looking out, basically it's as if it was hadn't changed. We're still in the time zone of the past. And then, like you'll see it's spoilt. Then motor cars flying by, take the good out of it.
Yeah, but the actual removing of you know the ditches and from the fields, you know, the way farmers tended to make bigger fields and that, it didn't happen so much around here.
Well, just well, I suppose the contours of the land wouldn't make it viable. It'd be too, I suppose, like we were getting the prevailing winds from the east, and if the ditches were removed, like it'd make it very bleak here. So,
And is it mostly sheep farming?
well, there's a lot of mixed farming. So there is a like a the further you'd go up the mountains, it's sheep farming. Down here in the lower part, it'd be cattle, and dairy farming.
Now, did you meet many of the older people living here when you going back in your years here?
Yes, yeah, there was a few characters in the area. So there was one man I just remember, barely remember now. Used to go to mass in a pony and trap. So that would be a kind of a relic of the
But
old.
did you get much information from any of these characters?
Unfortunately, I didn't at the time. It was only in latter years that I decided to record the stuff when it was nearly too late. But I did go then. I went to the old folks' hospital down in Baltinglass, and there's a few people from around the area. So I used to have a chat with them, and they were filling me in on a few things, all right.
Like what now?
Well, for instance, there's one particular man, when the reservoir was built back in the late 30s and early 40s, and there was about 80 families had to be moved. You see, when the lake got into, when the lake was there, and he's just talking about the villages and I have a fascination with the old bridges, and that is, I was naming them off for me, and there was the different, like I had a map and he was just pointing out the different areas for me.
Yeah, and did the reservoir actually changed a lot, the place? Did it move families and houses?
It nearly devastated the area because there was like there was a bog called the Killick Bog, and there was families there that used to cut turf on that. They'd hire the turf banks and they made a living out of selling the turf. So when the lake come in and flooded it, they were left with, they had no occupation. Then there was other people, like their farms, half of the farm would be under the lake and the other half, it wasn't making it viable. And then like there was a lot of controversy as well over the prices that were paid for the land. And then it divided families as well. A lot of the families had to move into Kildare and Meath and the surrounding areas. So that was where Punchestown come in. Like that once a year, the families then, they did, it was like a family gathering then at Punchestown Races. All the families would meet up at Punchestown once a year. It was a kind of a ritual.
It was a reunion
More
for the local
a
people,
reunion,
all the people coming together. But did so that did change
I did, and
enormously.
then a lot of shops in Blessington closed because there wasn't the population around to sustain them. There was we had two bakeries in the town and they had to go, and there was a couple of just ordinary shops, selling bits of everything. They had to close down. Like so, Blessington was really a very run-down place in the early 50s. But then a Dublin man come out, L.M. Byrne. He was a builder, and there was a land at the landlord's, the agent's house in Blessington. He called it the Downshire House Hotel. He made it into a hotel, and that resurrected the area again. It promoted tourism and it made a lot of people aware of Blessington and the lovely lakes and the scenery in the area. So that revitalized the area then. And then there was another man moved into the area. Jim Blake was his name, and he was very much into sustaining and like local employment, like because there was no employment and everyone had to go on the bus to Dublin. The only thing that was available was the sand pits. So he got the West Wicklow Development Association going, and they got an industrial estate going in Blessington. And then that sort of the wheel turned, then people start moving back out to here. And then around the lake then as well, like the Ballynochan and Lacken and all that area, then it was very sparsely populated. And then when people seen the beauty of the area, the sites then got expensive, which was a help to the locals, and it started populated the area again. So things are starting to bloom again, thank God.
So since the 1950s, it's been up and down. In the
Yeah,
50s, it went down
it was
because
very,
the
yeah, and then it's on the up and up now, so like the traffic going from Blessington to Dublin, it's unreal in the mornings. Like we'd be able to go into Dublin and say in the 50s or the 60s, it'd only take you at the most an hour.
Yeah, but at the time, I suppose, people generally were using Blessington as a satellite town, which would people could commute in and out, people who are working in Dublin. Would that be the case, do you think? Would a lot of people working in Dublin live out in Blessington?
It's the case now as well. Like we class them now as commuter residents. That's the unfortunate thing. Like the local community at back then, everybody knew everyone else, and everyone was they were all great neighbors to help out one another. But now people don't know their next door neighbor because both the husband and wife are working in town. And they just when they come back home in the evenings, then it's late, and they don't have time then to get involved in local interests.
But going back again now to what it was like before all that happened, you said you took a great interest in bridges. locally. Would you be able to give me some of the names and where they are?
Well, like these were the bridges, like the, I had seen photographs of them. The arch, there's a lovely bridge, say, for instance, now up at Clocklee. And I think it's one of the most painted bridges in Ireland, because no matter where you'll go, you'll see a photo or a painting of Clocklee Bridge.
And what's so special about Clocklee now?
Well, Clocklee, there's a beautiful church. It's the setting up there again. It's a rural setting in among the trees, and there's a lovely little valley. There's a little waterfall, and this bridge is a beautiful little bridge. And I can't think of the name of this stream now, but it meets up with the Liffey. So, and it's a lovely little scenic area, very popular on a Sunday then with people picnicking.
But a very old bridge, isn't it?
It's very, very old.
How many arches?
It's just the one arch.
Single arch, yeah.
It's a single arch. And then we've just further up on the gap, then there's another bridge. It's on a very bad bend. Again, just a single arch. And there's a lovely little lay-by. And again, it's a beautiful area for, you have a whole view of Kippure Mountain and looking down into the Liffey Valley. It's a very scenic area. So
there was a great skill attached to making bridges in the past, you know, where, you know, they got the correct dimensions and they pieced it together very, and they cut stone usually with. All that stone was hatches.
Yeah, well, like this area, it's full of granite quarries. And again, I'd say some of the top skilled masons in Ireland lived in this area. Like we have an example of it is there's a large house up in Tynode, and the stairway going up to it, it was made up in a place called the Dowry. And the stonemason that done it, he had these dovetail joints, which weren't seen. The architect that was fascinated how it was done, and he had to get the stonemason to come down and explain to them.
Yeah,
because there was no joints to be seen, you know, with the human eye. And also then up around, you had down in the village, then we had the Golden Hill quarries, and we had quarries over at the Wood End. And like you go into Dublin, and you're nearly every second big building in it is granite from either Ballynockan or from Golden Hill or the Wood End.
Yeah.
You know, so it supplied the countryside.
But to think, yeah, that these quarries were in existence going way back in time, were they?
They were, yes. And again, everything was done by hand. Which
and
was,
all that granite was carted, you know, if you think
about the... That had to be done by specially made carts with the horses. And from Crooksling, which is just quite close to this area, the quarrymen, they made a truck. There were 7 trucks from Crooksling to James Street. So they used to go so far and then have to stop to water the horses. And there was a coincidence then, like that most of them happened to be near an alehouse. So while the horses were being looked after, the men were enjoying themselves too, taking a rest.
You know, getting refreshments.
Yes.
And what about the, you know, there must have been blacksmiths and wheelwrights and furriers up around here as well, you know, between the quarry and the city.
Yeah, like we had very gifted blacksmiths in the area. We also had the farriers and the carpenters then. There was quite a lot of carpenters, and they more or less, some of the beside the blacksmiths, then you'd have the wheelwrights. You know, so it was all a kind of a combined effort, because each cart, then you needed the carpenter, then when the wheel would get damaged or the base of the cart to get damaged, you needed the blacksmith then for the hoop on it, or some parts of the harness to get damaged. And then the farrier, then you'd need him then if a horse lost a shoe, you know. So it was kind of a circle. It was a
Yeah.
circle within a
But
circle.
travel got easier because, as time went on, we had the trams, and they came right out to Blessington.
They
Could
did, yeah.
you tell me that the exit, how did it all start, and when did they start laying the tracks for the trams?
Yeah, well, as I was saying, the mode of transport in the early 1800s and that, it was basically, well, a donkey and cart for the small man. And then you had the pony and then the dray and that. And then you had the big wagons then for the granite. And then the well-off farmers, they'd have their gigs or their traps. And then, of course, you had the carriage, the horse and carriage. But it was quite cumbersome. They couldn't bring much loads or that. Like the say, for instance, the wool trade was when it would be in full swing, they used to have to go up through Kilteel and down to Racoole for to get export their wool over to England. And then the main Blessington Road isn't the one that we travel now. It was on the right-hand side. It was going up Talla Hill, which was a very, very steep climb. And then to alleviate all that, there was a new road then built down in Slade Valley, which was it was grand up to until you come to the Slade itself. And then you had a very, very steep climb, which was very hard on horses. So a new road then was the present road now. It was constructed then. So a lot of the farmers then and gentry come up with, when the invention of the steam engine come, they decided then, like that, well, right, Blessington would be get on the bandwagon, as we'd say. And they try to raise money, you see, to purchase land and that for it, but it turned out to be too expensive. But then there was an act passed in the British Parliament which enabled the steam engines that they could be put on the side of the road. And that then, of course, cut the costs nearly three quarters. And they'd only have to, like, they got an engineer out then to do a feasibility study, and it was a viable proposition. So they went ahead then, and they constructed a tramway from Terenure to Blessington on it was mostly on the left-hand side of the road. So it started in the 1800s, and then it was they were doing very good business, and then they decided then to and they also they were lucky then that they were in the barony of Talbotstown, and there was a levy put on if they were losing money on such a month or that, the barony would have to subsidise it. So then Pullafuca then it was a scenic area. There was a beautiful waterfall in it just before the dam was built, and it was a great tourist attraction. So they saw the potential then of setting up another company, like from Pullafuca to Blessington, to bring the people to it. And that unfortunately then they didn't get the baronial grant, so they weren't able to make it pay. And then an unfortunate the First World War come along then, and that had a devastating effect on the tram company, because they couldn't get coal, they couldn't get spare parts for their tram. And the other thing, like the trams they had then, they were steam trams, so they had to scrap a couple of them to get parts then to keep the others going. So it got the nickname then of the Scrap Iron Express. So then, right, when the First World War was over, then they were getting back on their feet again, and they were doing all right when the Civil War broke out. So the Civil War then, that was nearly the nail in the coffin, because the trams then were being hijacked every other day. They were being derailed, the bridges were being blown up, and the goods and that were getting robbed. So when it finished, then the buses come on the scene and the lorries. So the lorry then was much quicker than the tram. So they weren't able to compete with them. Then it was around 1932 then that they ceased business then, which was unfortunate.
Yeah, that was just before your time, because you were born in 1945.
Yeah.
But would you have any memories of any stories associated with the drivers or with anything that happened?
Yeah, I have a story all right that I was told about this woman had a donkey and cart, and she stopped the tram near the Lam, where we are now, and she tied it to the back of the tram, and she got onto the tram to get the tram driver to buy some pig's heads and a barrel of beer. Now, she was getting pig's heads and a barrel of beer for a thrashing. And the driver thought that she was a passenger, and he started off. And she asked the conductor then how fast was the tram going. And he says that about 20 miles an hour. And she says, I didn't think Neddy could run that fast. So, but lucky the reins broke anyway, yeah. And the donkey only got a couple of skint shins.
But just got there.
Just got there.
But is that all? They only travelled at 20 miles an hour.
Well, that was just that was woman anyway. Yeah. That, and there was another incident then when the Reaper and Binder come on the scene. You see, in Blessington itself, just at the corner of the Manachill Bride Road, it was known as the hiring corner. These men used to, when the harvest had come in, they used to go with their scythes and sickles to work. So when they seen the Reaper and Binder, they thought they were going to be out of a job. And they cut the canvas on the binder. So the owner of the binder was able to get on the Blessington tram, get the tram into Terenure, and then get another one into O'Connell Street, down to Lenehan's, Acapa Street, get his canvas, and back all in the one day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the space of a couple of hours, which it'd be impossible to do it now with our fast cars and the amount of traffic.
That's so extraordinary, isn't it? Yeah.
And then there was another funny incident that I had heard. There was a Father Brown. He was made a parish priest or up in Ballymount, and he was in America for 2 years. He's the well-known author there of the Mona Valla and From a Presbytery Window.
Yes.
And when he seen all the headstones, you see, there were so many accidents that people, like, they erected the headstones that when people were killed.
Mm.
And they thought, you see, it was known as the longest graveyard in Ireland. So he was asking the conductor, he says, are people killed here often? And the conductor says, oh no, he says, they're only killed once.
So,
so there's another story.
There's great humour and wit.
Oh, there was good humour and wit in it, yes.
What about in Templeogue, the place called the Morgue? There's a story associated with that.
Yeah, well, that when people were killed, they were always brought to a public house. And there's so many of them brought there that it got known as the Morgue. And the tower outside of the pub, there's a replica of the Blessington tram in it. You know, and it's there to this day. Like, quite a lot of people don't know about it. Like, on the clock tower.
Is there?
It is. It's still there.
Yeah.
So that's a replica of the tram. And also then in Blessington itself, there's just in the middle of the town where the traffic lights are now, there's a marker on the wall denoting the dividing line between the Pulafuca Tram Company and the Dublin Blessington Tram Company. That's still in the town.
Did you ever meet anybody who actually took the tram?
I did, actually. There's a man, Christy Sargent. He's still hale and hearty and still goes out for his game of golf and goes horse racing. He's a very active man. And he was telling me, like, that he used to, his granny was from Kimmage, and that he used to get the tram on a Sunday morning, and he'd go to Terenure and go walk down to Kimmage, and then in the evening then he'd get the tram back. And another man then, he'd be a clerk from Lacken. He used to get the tram on a Sunday afternoon down to Pulafuca. There used to be afternoon dances down there. So he used to go dancing on a Sunday afternoon. So there are two people that, and oh yeah, there was a third person in there, a Beth Halligan in Blessington. She remembers it, the tram very well as a youngster. They would be going out to Cross Chapel. That was where our parish church was, St.
Yeah,
Cross
it
Chapel.
brought people together for the first time, didn't it? The
Oh,
tram. It opened up.
it opened up the whole countryside. As I say, up to that time, people done very little travelling. Like the only people that would start to travel outside of this area would be a drover, or else a person that joined the army, or someone that was going to work in a big house. Other than that, people would only go within walking distance of the area. So
Yeah.
it opened up the whole area then.
It did indeed, didn't it?
And like then is saying like there was poems written about the tram as well, you know. So
Do you have one of those?
I have, yes.
Go ahead.
Will I have it? I mean,
Well,
have it put on that anyway.
you might think of it later, but outside your window there, I can see the remains of the old house that you took the stone and you used it to make a little pathway drive in. The old thatch cottage, was there a number of thatch cottages up around here?
Well, most of the houses would have been thatched. That's one thing that you'd notice in the area. There was very few two-story houses. They were all cottages. So I don't know the reason why.
But did you ever inquire of the family, the families that lived in them? You know, that would be long gone now, but the old family names.
Now, well, funny enough, most of the houses, like, well, around this area, like the families are still here.
Oh,
So they
really?
are, yeah.
They
Well, like
survived on along.
well, not in the actual houses themselves now, but in the area, like there's still family connections in the area.
Yeah, but just take your own wife's name, for example, Pay. Now that would be very Cromwellian, wouldn't it, if it came in with
Yeah, as
Cromwellianism?
far as I know, they originally went to they come in with the Brits,
Yeah.
in they were up in the Glenavamal, and then they moved to this area, then up to near the Kilbride Army Camp, and then they were moved down to here.
Yeah.
So they were army rangers. That was their occupation, the original plants, and then the rest of them went into farming.
And would a lot of the names around here would they be Gaelic names or English
No,
names
it'd
or
be
Anglo-Irish names
Anglo-Irish,
mostly?
yes.
Why is that? Is it because of the army camp that's situated close by, or?
Well, it would have a bearing on it, and I suppose another reason then would have been, I suppose, the famine then had a devastating effect, you know, and that new people then moved into the area afterwards. So, the what would you call it? Yeah, I'd say the famine now had quite a bearing too. But still, like down in the village now, like that we can like the shopkeeper that was in the village, Mr. Crawl, his family are still in the area, and they go back a long way. And there's Healy's, which go back a long way, and there's Halligan's. Well, they were originally Olligan, and they are still around the area. Yeah, so there's quite a few in the area still.
And the businesses in Blessington, would they have changed?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Like I think there's nearly a 20-year cycle with them. There's the oldest family in Blessington would be Gyves. They're back there since the 1600s. So other than them,
Were they merchants in the town?
they were yes, they were Huguenots originally, and I think they were shifted over from France to England, and then they were moved over here, and then they set up business in Blessington, and they're still here since the 1600s. Still a family of the there's two families of Jeeveses in Blessington still.
And would the businesses generally be publicans and say shopkeepers of all descriptions, or
Well, now they there's
nowadays?
yeah,
But
but
in
I know in yes, there was all they there was quite a lot of ale houses in Blessington until Father Matches come around the area. Oh, they that was one of the principal occupations in the area, and then it would be there was cobblers, like more or less what'd be in every area. There was the you had the cobbler, you had the tailor. And you had your blacksmiths, you had a nailer. There was another occupation in the town, the nailers. Then I don't know how they had the patience there to be making all the nails for building and that. And you'd have then of course you had the carpenters and yeah.
You mentioned Punchestown,
Yeah.
racecourse. Would rearing horses and horse breeding, was that something relevant around
Well,
here?
quite well, more so. Like we're on the borders of Kildare, but it would be like for this area, it would have been like draft mares and like we work on horses this area. Whereas like just down the road in Eadstown and that, like there was it was mostly be for the hunt and for point to points and for the racing. Like in such a small area, like there was a big difference between them. But again, with Punchestown, there used to be one race in it. It was called the Farmer's Race, and there'd be a farmer. They'd be out ploughing here, and then they'd go to Punchestown then with their horse, and they'd enter this race,
With the workhorse.
with a workhorse. Yes,
Really?
they would. Yeah, there was no one, like it was the Farmer's Race then, and.
And what distance was it, or what?
Well,
You don't
I
know
don't
yet,
know the
but
distance.
the horses would have survived that
Oh,
after
they would, and then
working.
they'd have to come back home again with the horse. So, like, it was a big social occasion. And again, of course, with Punchestown, coming up to Punchestown, if you hadn't your potatoes sown and all the work, the house painted and the whole lot cleaned up for the summer, like your potatoes wouldn't grow if they weren't done before Punchestown. That was sort of,
That
and
was the
then
marking date, was it?
Punchestown was the,
What
yeah.
was the date?
It was the end of April. It'd be the last week in April
So
and
all your
pan.
sowing had to be done before that
But
date.
that was the ritual because, like, the horses had to be brought to Punchestown then to be racing in it. Like,
That's interesting. What about sport? You see, you're right on the border, as you said, here with Kildare
and
and
Dublin.
South Dublin on the other
Yes.
side. So, where would your allegiance be when it came to a Gaelic football match or a hurling match? Is that something?
Oh yeah, no, of course we'd support Wicklow. And again, like we'd love going I'd love going down to I used to follow Eadstown, like in Kildare, like when they'd be in the championship or Ballymore Uses, so we'd go and watch them playing as well. And vice versa, when we'd be doing well in the championships here. In the local championships, the neighbours would come from all the areas up and to support us. So, like, we had quite a sport was big in the area, all right. We had a very good athletic club here. By they again, they where the tram comes in, they would we were way ahead of when with the marathon. They used to get the our local club now would organise a race from Nelson's Pillar to Blessington to get the tram into Nelson's Pillar and run the whole way out to Blessington, and like that used to get that was very popular. And then we had quite a few middle distance runners as well in athletics, doing very well back in the 20s and the 30s, and we'd a very good boxing club. And we also had a we'd a cricket club, which in the 20s, and then again we'd a tennis club,
Here,
so
my goodness,
we're well catered for.
and all
Yeah,
in the
just it will
parish
be in the
here.
parish. Yeah, be more or less based in Blessington, but a man, Sean Eustace, or Jack Eustace, we knew him as. He was a brilliant athlete, and he lived in the area here. And again, then with the football, we had quite a few football teams, or parish teams in the area in the early days.
Yeah. And did you play yourself
I did it. I
before
played a
you got
bit.
injured?
I played a bit of every. Yeah, I played rugby with CYM in Terenure, and I played hurling, and I played Gaelic football, and I played soccer.
So quite a fit man. Yeah. Do you think, looking back now at all the years that you've lived here, you really are passionate about the local history, and you're going to write a book soon, are you, on
Yeah,
that?
I'm writing a book on the tram, and I'm hoping to have it finished in this summer now, summer of 2008, and I'm going to donate the proceeds then to the daycare in Crookesling Hospital,
Yeah.
because some of the patients in there have been very good to me, as regards giving me information. So I was saying I'll do something in return.
Yeah, and do you find that sourcing material that it's a great place to go, actually, to talk?
It's a day I look forward to. And they're the when you get the patients in there, they're really passionate about it,
Yeah.
and they really are forthcoming with information. And if there's something they can't remember, they'll get a friend of theirs to come and tell me. So I try to record, but the unfortunate thing then, with books, you can't put everything in. If I was to write down everything I was told, the book would be about a million pages long.
Aidan Cruise, thank you very much indeed. Thank you.
Thank you.